Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred. You know, I was thinking after, in writing our book, and we're getting close. I'm so excited that we're getting closer to the finish line on this. And we were talking about one of the last steps of reliability planning and reliability management is executing the plan.
Yep.
And it's not a no-brainer. In other words, you have to pay attention to it. And it gets into this larger body of knowledge called project management. And one of the topics or one of the factors that goes into project management is, do you have a system in place already in your company to execute project tasks? And that is a question. It's not a yes or no question. It's really how mature, how capable is the system that you have in place in your company to execute reliability plan tasks or any other tasks?
Well, you know, a lot of organizations have a project development lifecycle or project lifecycle. What's fascinated me, and I've worked with hundreds of different teams and analyzing their reliability programs, and I always ask, what's your process for developing a project? And they all come up with some lifecycle project or project management cycle or whatever. And it goes from concept to design to develop, or development, design and development, getting ready for manufacturing, and so on. But they always name them different things. Some are generic, step one, step two, step three. Others are Bronze Age, Brass Age, Steel Age. It's like, huh. What? Why are you picking those? You guys don't do, you're an electronics company. What is this metal? Well, a guy that started the company, was a metallurgist or something, or historian. And it just is, most everybody's got a process saying we're going to have these major checkpoints and designs, and we're going to decide whether to fund it or move forward or not, and we're going to whittle down and make sure all the different departments and elements are in place. It's kind of a checklist in many organizations that are we on track and are we engaging all the right pieces. And oftentimes they have little to nothing to say about reliability. And so it almost always, in my experience, is that if there is an existing process, it's really up to who is managing or using that process to develop a product to include or not include reliability and quality and safety and environmental concerns and on and on and on, all the other design for X things.
Well, you're bringing up and great for bringing that up, because that's is like a topic in itself.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can frame this and if I have it right in my own mind. We have the topic of how reliability integrates into the product development process.
Right.
And that has, the military is quite organized around this.
Organized, but it executes pretty poorly because they use MTBF. Now, don't get me started on this.
Okay. They have there's a lot of work done to talk about the different gates and the different aspects of reliability in the product development process. Other companies have a comprehensive product development process, but as you point out, reliability is not necessarily integrated into that. That's topic one, which is how well does reliability integrate into the work tasks around product development. Topic two is, what kind of mechanisms are in place to execute tasks that have been identified as part of product development or as part of project project development?
Yeah.
And those are different topics.
Well, I think one way to know that you're in a reasonable or good situation with your reliability activities that you're recommending or being asked to accomplish, when the program manager who's managing the entire development team and through the development of this product goes, hey, Fred, how many samples are you going to need for the, you know, this accelerated test you got coming up? Because we need to plan ahead for that. It wasn't me going to him saying, can I please have 3 samples, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I want 30 samples and hope I get 3. Those kinds of games. It was, he knew that there was a lead time and he needed a budget, how many protos to make. And he was thinking ahead. This is an important piece of work that needs to be done. I need to know the answers. I'm going to make sure it happens. He was very proactive on this. And so in that circumstance, I felt like part of the team, that he was managing the details that enabled me to go about doing my reliability stuff. That was a good situation.
So there's a push and a pull. And I agree completely. You don't want to be pushing on a rope. You know, we have that nice visual from the old presentation we used to do.
Yeah.
And you want better to be in a cooperative team system. So there's a lot of dynamics here. Let me just sort of ramble a bit on some of the dynamics. Ramble is the wrong word, but try to unpack some of the dynamics. One of them is how enlightened management is on the subject of reliability. They might have the whole team of MBAs in the subject of project management, but nobody cares a lot or spends a lot of time other than lip service on reliability.
Yep.
So that's one dynamic, in which case they would have an infrastructure about executing project tasks, but they're not that interested in putting a bunch of reliability tasks into it. And so that's one.
Yeah, and you know you're in that circumstance when you say, hey, we need to run this task to answer these questions for this new component or this new design, and they go, well, we can't do that. That'll just slow us down.
Yeah, what's that going to cost? That's over budget. We don't have a budget for that.
That always takes too long. We're not doing that. You know, and then you know you're not integrated with the
right
system.
So what do you do if you're a reliability engineer and that's your environment?
Ooh, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to sit back and not answer this one.
Okay.
Well, you asked it, Carl. You answer it.
Yes. Okay. So you ask answers.
Yeah. That'll stop the questions real quick.
I think you have to go into teaching mode. And I don't mean you can present, get 5 minutes at a time on the staff meeting. Be persuasive to get yourself in front of the group and start presenting about the value of reliability. You have to go back to basics on why reliability matters. What's the cost of unreliability? Talk in their language, because you're going to need to get their attention that reliability matters.
Yeah, and it could be cost. It could be warranty downside. It could be delays to the program where you find a critical issue late in the program and you could have found it earlier. I mean, all kinds of ways that
safety
it's things of value, safety issues.
There's
tons of ways. Each program is different. They may be time to market driven, or they may be functionally, technology driven, or they could be cost driven, or a mixture, obviously. Or other drivers like aerospace is often weight. You just don't add any more weight to the aircraft. And that's a high priority. So you have to understand the dynamics of what's driving the main decisions. And that's a clue as to what's of value. And if you can present and discuss and educate how doing XYZ reliability program, like doing an FMEA early in the program, allows you then to sidestep and solve many of the major issues before you get deep into the design, and the costs go up exponentially.
So the first scenario that we're painting, if the management is experienced in project management, but they don't have reliability on their radar as a high enough value, so you have to go into influencing and teaching and persuading about reliability, then you can present a draft reliability plan and get their buy-in and participation, and so they cross over the not invented here problem and actually adopt it then the tasks for the reliability plan can be integrated into the already existing project management. That's scenario A. Scenario B is you have a management that cares about reliability. They're enlightened. They know the importance of reliability and safety. It's not just lip service, but they don't have a mature or working project management system.
So it's pretty chaotic in that environment. I've seen that a number of times. Requirements change. There's no controlled, requirement specification documents. Suppliers come and go and they're swapped out. And each proto that's made is probably different because somebody's been tinkering with it while you're making the protos. it just gets crazy. Somebody says, oh, this doesn't work. Let's change the concept. And you're 2 weeks away from manufacturing and, kind of things. Those are just signals that you've got a project management issue, which is not something we're going to solve for the organization. Yet my first take on this one, Carl, and I've seen it a number of times, is you just need to step up and say, well, I've got go ahead to do the reliability program. I'm going to set the example of how you execute. So it's thinking ahead. It was sort of like that program manager I worked with years ago says, all right, I'm going to need X number of samples at some point in time. That's a long lead time. What is it that I need to get in place, purchase orders or requisitions or components or whatever? Think through the planning part. Get your own PERT chart and Gantt charts going and do enough project management so you have the materials and supplies and resources you need when you need them to make it work. It takes more work, but it also sets the stage that, hey, you're pretty good at this project management thing. Why don't you take on, you might get you promoted to something you might not want to do. I don't know.
Or it increases your value for sure.
Yeah.
I totally agree, Fred, and we're on the right track here. You have, and I'll characterize it in a different way. So let's say from the gap analysis that we need to do a bunch of FMEAs. Your reliability plan could say conduct FMEA. That's not good enough.
Right.
Your reliability plan needs to talk about who's going to get trained, who's going to lead it, what procedure are you going to use, which FMEAs are you going to do. If you get it down to a level of task like that, I'll call them executable tasks, doable, then it's easier to project manage.
Right.
And so the second thing I'd say is get on the agenda of management. And so that once a month, once a week, once every other week, you can say, here's the status of the reliability plan execution, and here's where I need help.
Right. That brings up the point. I mean, we don't operate a reliability plan in isolation. It has to be integrated and coordinated with all the other players on your development team. And so being at that table is critical. Here's where you need those interactions and help and so on, and it could be funding resources or information. Yet I've also found that sometimes, we needed, at one point I was putting together a plan and we needed to roughly estimate, it was early in the development of this new platform, we needed to kind of know when the milestones were. When were we going to build prototypes? What was the sequence for these? And historically, this group, one of the more senior guys said, most of the time we do 4 to 6 prototypes. This is a brand new big platform, a lot of new stuff in it. We'll probably do 6 rounds. We're starting it now. These things typically take 2 years. So let's divide it out. And he just pulled out a calendar and said, all right, let's pick these dates. And it was just based on experience. And we just picked the dates. We made a calendar for the builds. And I said, well, I can work with that. What if it's not right? And he says, well, give it to the program manager and say, here's what we think the plan is. Can you correct this? And he goes, oh, that'll work. And he just used that document for the plan. He didn't create a new one. He just, oh, that looks good enough. Let's use that.
Very good.
So the takeaway was, if you need information, get it yourself, make it up, and then go check. Don't say, hey, Bill, can you tell me what the plan is? And then they got to go out and do a bunch of work. Do the legwork yourself.
Come in with a draft.
Yep.
Absolutely. I used to, I'll go back to GM days and I used to walk into the project leaders, like for instance, take a new Corvette program. So we'd have a new Corvette program, and I'd walk into the chief engineer or the project leader in the office, and I'd say, how can I help you achieve your reliability objectives?
Yep.
And that got the attention. We'd have like a 5-minute discussion. And then he said, in this example, I remember there was Dave Hill. He said, why don't you come in to the project team meetings, and I'll give you 5 minutes on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the week, I would prepare what the status was of different things. And then I would say, okay, here's what we're working on to help you on this, and here's the status. And then they would say, well, how can we help? And I'd say, well, it'd be nice if you guys showed up to the meetings or whatever the barrier is. And the takeaway for me there is relationships matter. And sometimes you need to form the relationship.
Yep. Yep. And there's the relationship and building trust. And one of the key points, I don't want to gloss over it at all, and I want to highlight it, is that you walked in and said, how can I help you achieve your reliability objectives? This is not the reliability manager coming in saying, hey, I need more samples in order to do my reliability project.
Right.
Right. It's not separate. It is somebody in the organization has the responsibility and authority, and they're going to be held their feet to the fire if this project works or not works, whether it's on budget or on time or it's reliable or not, or meets customer expectations or not. Somebody has that responsibility. And by recognizing that not only us, but all of the other teams that are out there are trying to help them achieve that objective, help the organization achieve that objective. And it's if you create a separate reliability plan and own it and drive that plan to success, that may or may not be, and often may is not, what that organization needs, what that team needs in order to solve their problems. You got to listen, you got to understand it and hear what are the hurdles, what are those major decisions, what are the things that keep them up at night, what are the bits of information that are essential for us to achieve the objectives.
Yeah, well put. I don't think I've ever known a project leader. Now this is true in General Motors portion of my career. And then since then, working with over 100 different companies, I don't think I've ever known a project leader that doesn't want to have a reliable product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they're not very enlightened, and so they're giving it lip service, in which case you have to go into educational mode or enlightenment mode and teach them. Or maybe they are enlightened but just don't know what to do, in which case you have a discussion with them and listen to what their needs are, like you say. And then point out how you might be able to help, or at least create a draft. But always keeping in mind the Pareto principle and working on the vital few, not trying to overload them.
Yep.
And or maybe they're very enlightened and they're very capable and they just need to know what to do in terms of a plan. And then you submit a draft plan and they agree to it or modify it. And then in the perfect world, they would take that and run with it and distribute it to their staff and integrate it into their project tracking system. So it really depends on the maturity of the organization and how you can influence them the most. But it is not something where you sit in your desk and wait for somebody to knock on your door.
No. Or yeah. Well, I sent you the memo with all the plan details. You know, how come it's not done?
Right.
No. Right. The hard part, I don't think it's all that difficult to know whether you're in a well-run machine to create new products or a chaotic, you know. I've seen startups with excellent programs, and I've seen major companies with just horrible programs of getting things done, and vice versa, obviously. But the idea is that you got to assess how much of this project management role do you need to take on? And it used to be part of the ASQ's CRE body of knowledge at one point, was project management. And it's gotten separated out and dropped. And I thought that was a mistake, because we need to be able to work with whoever is managing and leading the project and understanding their world and that they have all these constraints and priorities. If we don't understand how they're doing what they're doing, and it's harder to interact with them and to get the information and support we need. But vice versa, if that doesn't exist and we're still in charge of, hey, we need a reliable product, there's a lot more steps to it than just having a plan and executing it. There's those relationships and everything else. But the idea is that we can take on that role. We're in one of those very few positions in an organization that spans all the silos. It's us and the project manager. And I learned that at HP. I was like, why am I the only young engineer sitting at this table with all these, you know, managers that have 20 engineers working for him? He says, because you're the only one that has to talk to every one of them besides me.
Yeah, just going down to tools and methods, take an FMEA, at least in the commercial world, FMEA goes something like this. Once you've got the project underway, it's a technical project to understand what the failures are and the physics of failure. And then there's a prioritization of risk. Mm-hmm. But then you get into recommendations to reduce risk. And then you get into assigning those and the execution of the recommendations. The first half of it is reliability engineering. The second half of it is essentially project management.
Yep.
And you can't divorce those two from each other, because the reliability engineering will have no impact at all if it doesn't get translated into a project engineering to execute to reduce risk.
Yep. Yeah. And that's where you need that person that says, yep, that's important. Let's put that in our to-do list. Let's prioritize that. Let's make sure there's resources behind that. Let's put that on our tracking. And yeah. Some use a Fracas system. Some use their Gantt and PERT charts that they're using for their project.
Others. There's Windchill. There's all types of software programs that'll do this. But the software doesn't do it by itself.
Right.
And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, Fred. But it takes attention by management. And so that's why, in addition to getting it into project management tools like the software programs, I want to see reliability engineers forge relationships with management to show up at different meetings and represent the reliability in a positive way and talk about status and talk about roadblocks and get help to overcome roadblocks as needed, and have that part of the influencing skills in addition to the technical skills.
Yep, definitely. And well, I'm just thinking, we were talking just before we hit record, is that the influencing skills is, we have a rough draft for a chapter that really needs some work. So we'll have to put that in our project plan.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's so important, but there's so much to say, and we have to do it in a concise, the vital few principles on influencing that reliability engineers can adopt, and that's the goal there. If you're a listener and you have any input to this whole subject of, you know, what kind of environment do you find yourself in? Is it one that can execute easily? Is it one where you have to teach? Do you have to actually learn project execution and management yourself in order to be able to talk the language? Where are you, and what questions do you have for us? We'd love to carry on more podcasts on this subject.
Yeah, and you can head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you can find a SpeakPipe widget that allows you to record us a message and, literally join the conversation. Or there's a contact form there. We seem to get a lot of our comments and feedback through LinkedIn. And so Carl and I and the other hosts are readily available and regularly active on LinkedIn. So you can send us messages through that. Or you could find us, our contact information, on our respective individual sites or on our about pages on Ascendo Reliability. So plenty of ways to become a part of the conversation that we regularly have through this podcast. And we welcome you to join us.
Very good. Nice conversation, Fred.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, this is one of those topics that, as we got into it, I was like, oh, okay, there's another topic. There's another topic.
Yeah, there's another door here to open up. Same here. Lots more to talk about on this subject, but had a lot of fun.
So anyway, we look forward to hearing from you, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks, Fred.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.